Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years and 100 Movies. Today is day 10 of the Season of the Witch, and today we're going to be talking about probably my favorite topic in horror, and one that I've gone back to plenty of times, and if you're sick of it, well, then too fucking bad, because today we're talking about the Universal Monsters once again. Now, the great thing about the Universal Monsters is I'm pretty sure I've already done something like 7 episodes about them, and I am yet to actually talk about all of the Universal Monsters. And there was so many fucking sequels in these series that I could probably do I could probably do 3 whole episodes just about all the sequels. But I'm going to show restraint and I'm only going to do 1 episode. And basically what I'm going to do is touch upon some of the franchises within the Universal Monsters that I've already talked about, and some of the big ones that I actually haven't talked about at all, including the Invisible Man and the Wolfman. If this is the first episode that you listen to, or if you're unfamiliar with the Universal Monsters, frog caught in my throat. The Universal Monsters date back to the 1930s. I mean, you can argue the 1920s, but if we're going off of marketing, they go back to 1931 with Dracula and Frankenstein. And this is basically a cash grab that Universal ended up continuing making these horror movies that have such iconic creatures as, like the aforementioned Dracula, Frankenstein, the Mummy, the Bride of Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, the Invisible Man, and the Phantom of the Opera. Now, interestingly enough, there was a set of Universal Monster Funko blind box toys that were released 2 years ago, and they also had the Mole People in there, so I guess technically the Mole People are part of it, or the Mole Man, which is, this is going to sound really bad, but once again, this is in the 1940s, it's, the Mole People are albino Sumerians that live underground. So I wanted to take a chance, like I said, to talk about some of these monsters, which I love. The Universal Monsters, I mean, they're super iconic to this day. I mean, shit, like, you can see the iconography of these characters in tons of, like, bands, like, horrorcore bands and, like, psychobilly bands, even before that, and not just in music, in movies themselves. And these movies are remade ad fucking nauseum. Like, aside from these original 30s and 40s movies and some from the 50s, notably The Creature, there's plenty of movies that Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, they've been remade plenty of times, at times by Universal itself. And there's something just about these characters that have resonated with people, and I think that something about the monsters as outcasts, the fact that these movies really kind of focus on the monsters makes for them to be something that people really gravitate to. And I think that people can really see, like, their own struggles or see themselves in these monsters to a certain extent. And I feel that that is part of the reason that these movies have persevered, because I love these movies. But honestly, outside of maybe the Frankenstein series and, like, the original Dracula and the Mummy, most of them are not very well made. And that's not a knock. I mean, these are movies that came out like 80, 90 years ago. So the fact that they can still, that people still love them, that these characters have persevered for all this time, that shit, earlier last decade, there was a whole idea to kind of do a, which I've talked about before, doing this Marvel comics, like MCU style dark universe, which is a terrible idea on its face, but like even that they would want to bring back these properties. And shit, even the fact that in this year 2020 we had an Invisible Man remake, that was fucking incredible. There's just something about the Universal Monsters that just has made them iconic. I mean, they not only made Universal, they fucking made Hammer to a large extent in the 50s, and a lot of people have taken these characters and, you know, done their own interpretations. And even in the 90s, you kind of had like this little mini like reimagining of the major creatures, the major monsters, and shit, even The Shape of Water, which was an Oscar-winning Best Picture movie, which is wonderful and I love, is really just Guillermo del Toro's take on The Creature from the Black Lagoon. So these movies, like I said, are great. Yes, they're not all the best made, and especially after those initial ones, the quality really dips. But, I mean, this is something that I've talked about plenty of times, where just because a movie doesn't look great or not everything is done in a way where it stood the test of time doesn't mean it's a bad movie. I mean, what makes a bad movie is when they miss the intent of what they're reaching for. And these movies, by and large, they hit that. I mean, yeah, there's some pretty bad ones among them, but when you have a franchise that encompasses something like close to 30-some-odd movies, you know, you're not going to hit it out of the park every single time. And considering the budget constraints that we had on these films, the time constraints, and the just effects constraints that were around, I think these movies are great. I love them, and I can't do enough to spotlight how great these movies are, because, you know, I think part of it is some of it is nostalgia, but not like, you know, I didn't watch these as a kid. I remember just going to the video stores, like on Halloween, and just finding all these random ass, like Universal Monster movies, like when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and just being really entertained by them. And that's really what I love about them, is that I can pop on Dracula, I can pop on The Invisible Man, shit, I can put on House of Frankenstein, and I'm gonna enjoy it, you know. And when you're talking about horror, like you kind of have to talk about these characters, because they've just been around for so long and they're so iconic. So as I've talked about some of the first movies that introduced a lot of these characters, so for some of them I want to talk about sequels. So I already talked about Dracula, which starred Bela Lugosi, and it's a great movie, one that my daughter, really interestingly enough, as I mentioned before, she saw it as a love story, and she kind of didn't understand why everyone was trying to stop Dracula from, like, being with the person that he loved. So that leads us to 1936's Dracula's Daughter, which is a direct sequel to Dracula. Like, it literally starts off, like, right as Dracula ends, and Van Helsing is being brought up on trial for murdering Count Dracula. As this trial is about to start, we are introduced to Countess Maria Zaleska, who is the daughter of Dracula, the titular Dracula's daughter. This movie, much like Cat People, much like other movies, is very queer-coded. This one isn't, maybe, outside of, like, one scene, there really isn't anything that's overt, but it's there, you know. And this movie is a lot of fun. I'm always fascinated just by how they would kind of code those things into these movies at this time, because there was so many constraints as to what could be shown. And to just have something as innocuous as, you know, Maria picking up a homeless woman and inviting her into her home, that the undercurrent of that is that this is a lesbian relationship, is striking. And that, I mean, this is pre-Haze, this is after the Haze Code, so it's striking more so in that sense. But Dracula's Daughter, it's a fun movie. A lot of it is based off of Carmilla as well, as I've talked about with other movies. Honestly, I think there's only been, like, one or two actual, like, literal takes on Carmilla. Like, most of the time it's other movies. Like, I think last time I talked about Vampyr, that take elements from it. And much like that one, this does as well. This also has a lot of elements of Dracula's Guest, which is basically a chapter out of Bram Stoker's Dracula that was excised due to length. And due to some copyright issues, basically Bram Stoker fucking up and not getting copyright here in America, to cut it short, Dracula's public domain, so part of the reason why we've had so many damn Dracula movies. So just Universal decided to do their own thing and just kind of steal some stuff from Dracula's Guest. But Dracula's Daughter is definitely worth checking out. I think all these movies are worth checking out, so I'm probably going to say that after everything. But I really enjoy it. The other, like, when you look at the Universal Monsters, I mean, it really, if it's going to come down to anything, it's either going to be Dracula or the Frankenstein monster. And I think I've talked about basically every Frankenstein movie except for, like, two of them. And the one I kind of wanted to talk about, the one I'm not talking about is Ghost of Frankenstein, which is the fourth movie, the sequel to what I am going to talk about, which is Son of Frankenstein. And the really cool thing about the Frankenstein movies is that overall, they're the ones that are the most consistent and the ones that have ended up doing some of the, I guess, things that have kind of helped these movies to stand the test of time. So, like, Dracula, of course, stars Colin Clive as Dr. Henry Frankenstein, and Boris Karloff, or Karloff, as he was known back, as they used to just promote him back then, as the monster. And it really is kind of basically the first half of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which was then followed by Bride of Frankenstein, which is basically the other half of the novel. And in that one, you know, Boris Karloff returns. So does Colin Clive. And we also get Elsa Lancaster as, the Bride of Frankenstein and Mary Shelley. Those two movies are great, and they're followed by Son of Frankenstein, which isn't as good, but is up there. It's definitely, like, this, the quality overall of the Frankenstein movies is phenomenal, and Son of Frankenstein is definitely worth checking out. On top of having Boris Karloff coming back, we also have Bela Lugosi in this as Igor, and we have Basil Rathbone as the son of Victor Frankenstein, of of Dr. Frankenstein. You know, he's Baron Wolf von Frankenstein, who's trying to basically distance himself from his father. And the other really awesome thing about Son of Frankenstein is, if you ever watch Young Frankenstein, the Mel Brooks comedy, most of that plot line of that movie is directly lifted from Son of Frankenstein. Because we have, you know, Wolf coming to his ancestral home, trying to distance himself, like, but with the Von Frankenstein, not Frankenstein, as it is in Young Frankenstein, but kind of trying to distance himself, but of course being roped in to once again reviving the creature, the monster, and, you know, bloody hell ensues. But the other cool thing is that Bela Lugosi, as I mentioned, is in this movie, and he plays Igor, who I feel that in the cultural, like, zeitgeist, it's like Dr. Frankenstein, Igor, and the monster. But in the first movies, the assistant doesn't have a name of Igor, so this is kind of where we first have Igor. And Frankenstein overall, like I said, these movies are all great. Son of Frankenstein came out in 1939, and as I said, it was followed by Ghost of Frankenstein, which I want to say was the last time that Boris Karloff played the Frankenstein monster. I had already talked about the Mummy, the Boris Karloff movie, which the funny thing about The Mummy is there's a bunch of sequels, and it's almost like the sequels are the ones that people remember. So that the reason I bring that up is because The Mummy's Hand, which is one of the sequels, is the movie that directly gets remade all the time. So in The Mummy's Hand, we have a couple of archaeologists who end up reviving, you know, the mummy Keres, and after defiling his tomb, and then they are then stalked by Keres, and Keres in this, unlike in the original Mummy, is a man wrapped in bandages going after them. And this is more of an kind of adventure movie, more so than a horror movie. There's horror elements in it, obviously. I mean, there's a mummy going around strangling people, but like, when you think of, like, the 1999 Mummy, when you think of even the Tom Cruise Mummy, what they're going for is something more along the lines of The Mummy's Hand, and not so much the original Mummy movie. But The Mummy's Hand, it's fun, and that's the thing about the Mummy movies, like, they're just fun, and so this one kind of continues that. Technically, maybe not the best made movie, but who gives a flying fuck? I mean, you have a guy running around as a person wrapped in bandages, like, literally strangling people to death. So I don't know what more you can want from a movie than that. As I mentioned, one of the other major characters of the Universal Monsters is the Invisible Man. And I never actually talked about the original Invisible Man movie, which is based on the novel by H.G. Wells, directed by James Whale, who had directed Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and it stars Claude Rains. Claude Rains, who in this movie as Dr. Jack Griffin, the Invisible Man, is just chewing up scenery left and fucking right. I mean, even though the Invisible Man is invisible, and much like the Mummy, when he's just kind of wrapped up with sunglasses and he has like a smoking jacket. When he's not trying to be invisible, even when he takes everything off and is invisible, you can see him coming a mile away because he cackles like a loon. This movie is great. It's ridiculous. And it kind of continues having these, just like all of these movies, they continue having all these great, wonderful character actors that you just see through all of these people. Like Van Helsing shows up in the actor Van Helsing, not the character Van Helsing, the actor that plays Van Helsing will show up in like Frankenstein or show up in the Mummy, and these guys show up everywhere, men and women, and it's just really, really great to see that. But the Invisible Man, I think really what it talks, it's really interesting in that it kind of talks about, like, we have this idea of the mad scientist, which is all the rage in the 30s and 40s, but he slowly starts going insane by his own experimentation, and he starts to lose his humanity. And it's something that I think really is explored more so to much more, you know, depravity in something like Hollow Man. But of course, that's a Paul Verhoeven movie, so he's not going to cut you any slack. It's Verhoeven. And more so also the control aspects of it the Lee Whannell Invisible Man that came out this year. But there's a lot of that sort of idea even in this movie from 1940 about what someone can get away with when they don't have to see themselves in the mirror, which is actually kind of the tagline for Hollow Man now that I think about it. But Dr. Griffin is fucking insane, and this movie's just a blast because it's Claude Rains just chewing scenery, being a homicidal maniac, or I should say Claude Rains' voice, because most of the time he's either invisible or he's wrapped up under a bunch of bandages. And this is a movie wherein the Invisible Man he's the antagonist, and much like a lot of these movies, yes, like Dracula's antagonist, the Mummy's the antagonist, but we don't really follow them the whole time. We spend most of our time with Claude Rains as the Invisible Man. So this movie it's great, and the Invisible Man is just, the looks are just so iconic. Love the Invisible Man. The other character, major character that I somehow neglected to talk about, because fuck it, I never talk about werewolves because there's not that many great werewolf movies, that's the Wolfman. I did talk about the Wolfman, but I talked about it in sequels. I talked about, like, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, but not the original Wolfman, which stars, and much like in every single movie with the Wolfman, stars Lon Chaney as Larry Talbot, the Wolfman, the man who is cursed and has to try, he's trying to break this this curse that he has that makes him turn into that turns him into a lycanthrope, that makes him turn into a wolf, more of a wolf, well, a literal wolf man, because he's like on all four, he's not on all fours running around, he's upright with this iconic makeup. And another movie, much like I had talked about with like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where they do as much as they practically can within camera to show that transformation, and it's super effective and it looks great, and it's basically all done with makeup and shadows, and it's just amazing to see that those things like that would like hold up to this day. And Larry Talbot is this like tragic figure. He's this man who through an act of selflessness ends up getting cursed and now has to live with that curse forever, trying to get rid of it and trying to be better, but being unable to because of his bestial nature. And on top of it being cursed also in these movies basically as being immortal, like nothing can kill him, he gets electrocuted, he gets blown up, he gets rubble rained down upon him, and he keeps coming back. And Lon Chaney Jr. is just interesting in that he played most of these characters at one point or another. Like after Dracula's Daughter, there was Son of Dracula, where he plays Alucard, the son of Dracula, which is, of course, Dracula backwards. He shows up later on as the monster in the later Frankenstein movies. He shows up as the Mummy in the later Mummy movies. He continues to play the Wolfman. I mean, I guess he never played the Invisible Man, or the Phantom of the Opera, since there was only like the one movie for the Phantom. But they never stuck him in Dragon, had him play the Bride of Frankenstein. But I'm guessing, had they given Lon Chaney Jr. the chance, he probably would have killed that too. This movie is just great, and it's one of the very few really great werewolf movies outside of something like An American Werewolf in London, which is more of a comedy, or Werewolves of London, or I Ginger Snaps. I guess I'll toss in maybe The Howling, which is also more of a comedy. But yeah, just werewolves just don't really do it. I mean, they're usually they're secondary characters a lot of times, like in something like Twilight or Van Helsing, which is utter shit. But still, I mean, I guess the werewolf ends up being the hero of that movie. But yeah, I mean, if you want to see a good werewolf movie, The Wolfman is definitely worth checking out. As I mentioned, I already talked about the Phantom of the Opera, and starring Claude Rains, which was actually a remake of the 1920s one starring Lon Chaney Sr. And then, of course, in the 50s, we had The Creature from the Black Lagoon, The Gill Man, who, as I mentioned before, is kind of low-key my favorite of all of these. Definitely a character that has inspired other people later on to much fanfare. And The Creature from the Black Lagoon was so successful that it actually spawned a couple of sequels, Revenge of the Creature and The Creature Walks Among Us. Creature Walks Among Us is kind of a weird movie. It's not very good. But then I guess Revenge of the Creature isn't that good either. However, I really enjoy it. And if you watch it, I really feel like a lot of the stuff that Del Toro did in The Shape of Water is kind of straight ripping this fucking movie off. And in a way, also probably Jaws, to some of the later Jaws sequels to a certain extent. Was it Jaws 3 that has that's in the aquarium? Because in this movie, we start off with an expedition going once again to the Amazon and basically blowing up the fucking Black Lagoon in order to stun the creature and take him as a prisoner back to Florida and put him in an aquarium for everyone to gawk at. The same time, our scientists that are trying to learn more about the creature and are trying to basically, you know, study him. And amongst the scientists, we have a lab assistant played in his first movie role by Clint Eastwood, who has just a couple of lines and is in a blink and you miss it sort of cameo. But he does actually speak. So I guess it's a little bit more than a cameo. Also among these researchers is Helen Dobson, played by Laurie Nelson, who the creature becomes infatuated with, much like in the first movie, and tries to run off with her. And we have these scenes of the creature running amok in Florida, flipping cars over, grabbing people and jumping in the water, and I guess killing them, and just generally causing destruction. I have a real soft spot for the creature. I love that design. I think he looks great, and I think even with The Creature Walks Among Us, where they try to make him more of a human and he rejects this and goes back to being in the water, and like I said, that movie's not that great, I still enjoy it. I enjoy the creature. I enjoy all of these movies. I just love the Universal Monsters. And in a way, I guess I was happy and sad that Dark Universe never happened, just because it sounded like such a fucking nuts idea that I was pretty sure it was destined to fail. But hey, you know, sometimes like it's good to see these great failures. Like, we never got to see, you know, Superman Lives, like this legendary, terrible fucking looking Tim Burton Superman movie starring Nicolas Cage. But had that been made, that would have been like something where it's like, this fucking thing was made, can you believe this craziness, you know? And in a way, I kind of wanted to be able to say that about the Dark Universe, but that didn't happen. But you know, maybe we're gonna get some interesting stuff. I mean, we already got Shape of Water, we got The Invisible Man, there's talk of, you know, doing some other I think we're doing Wolfman, doing some other movies, and these movies have been remade, but there's definitely something there. And as I mentioned at the top of everything, you know, amongst those Funko Pops that came out, the little mini Funko Pops, was a mole person from the movie The Mole People from 1956, which I had never heard of before I saw this toy, and was really curious as to why it was marketed as part of the Universal Monsters. I will say the Mole People do have this pretty great look. and it makes a really, really fun toy, but the movie itself is pretty terrible. Like, I was able to track this down. I think, like, someone uploaded a bootleg version of it on YouTube, because I tried looking for an actual copy of it and I couldn't find it. Not to say that they're not out there, they probably are, but I was almost like, why of all the things would you brandish this as part of the Universal Monsters? But like I said, at least we have like this cool makeup, even though it looks like it's fucking falling, like the hands especially look like they're falling off of people as they're walking around in this. And this really is just kind of like it's the Mummy, but in Sumeria instead of, and with having to do with Hollow Earth in theory, instead of the pyramids in Egypt. So I guess there's that at least. I mean, if you end up running through all these movies and you still have a hankering for some more Universal Monsters movie, I mean, I guess you can watch this. You'd probably maybe just check out some of the remakes, but and not that the remakes are necessarily that great. Some of them are better than others, but I mean, it's something that's out there if you ever want to watch it. So I mean, as I mentioned, you know, I love the Universal Monsters, and I can't say enough about them. I definitely think it's worth checking out some of these movies and give them a chance, because they're so fucking old that they've been ripped off mercilessly and so many times that you're gonna see these movies that look and sound familiar half the time or most of the time, but they're worth checking out, and they're just lots of fun. So that's it for today. Thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow.